there.
Well, welcome to Animal Voices. I hope those were happy animals grunting, and the chickens also making...
They were very happy animals, I can tell.
Yes, because in this program, Animal Voices, we wish to celebrate the glory of the animal kingdom. And I believe that when people hear this message of understanding and realize how much we have in common with our kindred species, the animals, people will step out and speak out for the protection of our environment and the animals with whom we share this planet. You're listening to Animal Voices, coming to you on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, which is a non-commercial, cooperatively owned, listener-sponsored community radio station. Located in the heart of Vancouver's downtown Eastside, Co-op Radio is a voice for the voiceless that strives to provide space for underrepresented and marginalized community. Alan Jensen is our technician. My name is Carl Loskin, and we have a great program for you today. Shortly we'll be speaking with
Kirsten Diaz.
We'll be speaking with Kirsten Diaz. In the studio today also we have Kim Reed.
Hello, so, good afternoon everyone.
So, it is afternoon. Yeah.
What was the topic for today?
We have, around 12:30, we'll be speaking to Kirsten Diaz, and she's the Marketing and Logistics Coordinator for the SPCA Paws for a Cause, an event that's happening this Sunday, so it's very topical.
Great, and shortly we'll be speaking with Dr. Carol Gigliotti, an Associate Professor at the Emily Carr Institute, where she teaches environmental ethics, digital media, and cultural studios. She's also the author of Leonardo's Choice. Well, Alan, you've been away for a week or two, a bit longer, and you were in the area of the Kettle Valley Trail area. So what did you experience there? Any animals?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a good place for animals. Yes, there were animals. Lots of small animals. It's great. Around the city, you see the odd gray squirrel and whatever, but out there, there were so many chipmunks, both the seven-striped and the other type, whose name I can't remember, and various types of squirrels, and, of course, big animals. We encountered a couple of bear, and we encountered lots and lots of deer, black-tailed deer.
So what we had was, Alan was telling me before the program that actually they are these, I said, but mostly one sees white-tailed deers there. But he said that's a bit of a misnomer. They are, in fact, black-tailed deers. So, last year week we spoke about bear and wolf hunting. And, of course, there was a wonderful quote by Jimmy Stewart, and he said, "Animals give me more pleasure through the viewfinder of a camera than they ever did in the crosshairs of a gun sight." And after I've finished, inverted commas, shooting, my unharmed victims are still around for others to enjoy. I have developed a deep respect for animals. I consider them fellow living creatures with a certain rights that should not be violated any more than those of humans." Well, do we have a guest on the line? Good. Well, Dr. Carol Gigliotti is an associate professor at the Emily Carr Institute, where she teaches environmental ethics, digital media, and cultural studies. She's also the author of Leonardo's Choice, and a book that's going to be coming out soon called Wildness and Technology. Welcome to Animal Voices, Carol.
Hi, Carl. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, that's great. Now, Leonardo's Choice, that sounds such a fascinating title to a book, because we knew that Leonardo da Vinci was a vegetarian.
Yes.
Now, why did you write this book, and what is the choice?
Well, the book is actually an edited book, so it's an essay by myself, an introduction. I have an essay, and then there are 13 other essays and a dialogue with Steve Baker, a cultural art historian from the UK, and then a number of essays by quite a few people. The part of the title that you didn't mention was Genetic Technologies in Animals. So the book is about the impact of genetic technologies on animals, and it's written from an interdisciplinary view, many, many views, philosophers, artists, anthropologists, lawyers, biologists. So there are a number of different people from different disciplines in the book.
Great. Now, so what is this genetic technology that you're writing about?
Well, the book grew out of a journal that I edited based on some artists who were working with live animals and live animal tissue in their work. And they were discussing in the work, or they were the concept of the work was to sort of look at our relationship, not with animals particularly, but with new genetic technologies. And of course, genetic technologies refer to any kind of transference of genes to make transgenic animals. So you would cross two different species, genes from two different species. And this is, of course, a big new area in biotechnologies, along with nanotechnology. Cloning is another thing that's discussed in the book, even though that's...
Maybe you can give us an overview of your view, your personal views, on this whole technology thing and research that's going on. I believe you've done your own research.
Yeah, I actually have been writing about ethics and technology for quite some time. One of my doctorate is from the Advanced Computing Center for Arts and Design, and I teach new media, and I've been involved in new media as an artist, but also as a critical writer, writing about ethics and technology. And I've usually come from an environmental point of view and my long-standing involvement with animal rights. But I particularly, in the past, no, I'd say, I guess 8 years or more, I've been involved, about 8 years, I've been involved with particularly writing about newer technologies, biotechnologies, robotics, artificial intelligence, and artificial life.
So how is this technology that's so breaking, you know, there's so much new technology, research, and coming out all the time, how is this affecting the animals? How is it? How do you view that?
One of the big issues, at least for me and a number of people, of course, in Leonardo's Choice, is that of course animals are used all the time in experimentation, and they're certainly used in transgenic experimentation. And one of the big problems with that, aside from the fact that animals are used in experimentation, which in my mind is a problem to begin with, in terms of my feeling is that this is really a catastrophic moment for animals, because not only do we have control over them in terms of their life and where they're able to go. Certainly animals in experimentation are not kept in conditions that would provide for the flourishing of their life. We see them as objects, and I think that in terms of biotechnologies, the conflation often of digital technologies or digital ways of thinking and digital ways of looking at data, the animal then becomes actually code. So anything about, in the research, anything about an animal becomes really code that can be transmitted digitally. And we really lose the ability to understand anything about animals themselves. So in biotechnology, my fear is that animals are becoming code.
Maybe enlarge on that. Animals are becoming code. Now, this, you're talking about the digital era, but so they're becoming code. Maybe just enlarge on that a bit.
Well, it's particularly in databases where a particular gene is a particular trait is seen as something that is totally involved with transferring a particular gene, so that one trait can be transferred to another animal or another being. But also, just in terms of very large databases, the agricultural industry is very interested in transgenic animals, you know, how to make
sure.
bigger, fatter, tastier animals. And so much of the research that's being done is both for medical purposes and for agriculture. I think that from what a lot of my research in terms of what people are really interested in now is that researchers are seeing farm animals as one big database that they will be able to work on. So again, you know, when many people, I think, in this day and age realize that factory farms are really not a good place for animals, or a place to, if they're still buying meat, what they don't realize is those places are also providing the kind of analog, that means, you know, non-digital, the kind of real flesh and tissue that provides research that then is transferred into digital code. And the thing about being transferred into digital code is that one can transmit that as knowledge to any other place.
Right.
So rather than, you know, understanding animals in a way that, like, somebody like Mark Beckoff does, a cognitive ethologist out in the field, wonderful man who, you know, does research with animals out in the field, not captive animals. He's retired now, but really has written a number of books on the cognition and consciousness of animals. Instead of really trying to understand more about the beings, you know, we share the earth with, we're really reducing knowledge about them to digital forms that can be transferred, changed, and sold. And of course, money plays an enormous role in this kind of transmission.
Now, with Dr. Carol Gigliotti, you know, the Emily Carr Institute is always more closely associated with art. And so what is the relationship with art and what you're doing there?
Well, certainly, as I said, my interest has always been in animals and our relationship with animals. When I was making art, that's what I was doing. But so I brought that into my writing, my philosophical writing on ethics and technology. But certainly a number of artists are using, in order to talk about a very powerful change, a force of change, my feeling is not for the better, but a force of change in contemporary culture and certainly political and economic culture in the world is biotechnology. And so a number of artists became involved in that in their work. So we're not talking about painting and drawing. We're talking about conceptual work. We're talking about an artist who actually commissioned a fluorescent bunny a number of years ago. Eduardo Kotz commissioned a fluorescent bunny to be made in a French lab. And there was quite a big stir about this. But there are a number of other groups and other people working in this area. A number of artists, and certainly I agree that they should have their idea that, you know, thinking about contemporary issues is enormously important in art. You know, I certainly think that art should, it plays a large role in change and in political thinking and in political change, economic interests, and not just, you know, buying a piece, but actually looking at the economy and how that works for people and the planet. But I felt that there were artists who were talking about these things, using animals in this process and using tissue from animals and not really addressing the fact that, you know, anything about animal experimentation, factory farming, or the role of the animal and the impacts on the animal themselves or animals themselves.
So now, Carol, as this technology is changing and you're talking about the digital effect here, one would say so does the art. And you've explained that somehow with the rabbit and that came up, but you've also done this. There's been this kind of art about factory farms of animals, and basically that's why we're doing the program here, because that's to us such an unspeakable a cruelty towards our kindred species. But what has your experience been with this factory farms and art?
Certainly when I was a practicing artist, my work dealt with factory farms as well as experimentation. So I did do a few series. One was called Tales from the Factory Farm, and was a print series of about 16 pieces that I showed quite a bit when I was living in Washington, D.C. And then I also did a series called the Dante series, which was a piece about animal experimentation that was a series of 9 very large pieces, and that showed quite a bit throughout the states. But I think in terms of, there are a number of artists who are... And a number of artists, and I say that term broadly, certainly writers, musicians, performance artists, and visual artists, and designers, media artists, filmmakers, who are beginning to make, well, not just beginning, they've been doing this, photographers for some time. Suko, of course, is a well-known artist who has always involved her work with animal rights and issues about animals. But there are a number of other artists who are doing this. Britta Jasinski, for instance, is a wonderful photographer from the UK whose pictures or photos of animals in zoos are really quite affecting. And there are people here at Emily Carr, Julia Andreev, one of our faculty members at Emily Carr. We're now a university, so I can say Emily Carr University, is doing some wonderful work with ideas about animals in interactive media, which is really exciting. Carol Wall is a photographer who actually runs our writing center, and she's doing some wonderful videos and photography on animals in the wild, and animals often that one doesn't really think of as an animal. I guess it would be more a fish-like creature, nudibranches, snails, just some wonderful material that I'm hoping will show quite a bit soon.
Now, Carol, I'm familiar with many of the YouTubes that come across, and one gets such a mix of them, and there are so many of them. But, the ones that people send me have a tremendous effect on me because
yes.
It's so graphic.
Yes, and so one of the things that that I am doing right now, I developed an environmental ethics course at Emily Carr a couple years ago, and I taught that for 2 years, and then this past year I've been on sabbatical, and Carol Wall actually has been teaching it. And I always taught animal rights in that because, of course, animal rights are a large part and really a generating force behind environmental ethics. And this year at Emily Carr I am teaching a course I've just developed called Critical Animal Studies. So I'm teaching the students who are in third year, visual arts, photography, animation, design, all forms of media, sculpture, painting, ceramics. I have just tons of all different kinds of students, and it's really a booked class. There's lots of interest in this class.
Now, you're also writing a new book called Wildness and Technology. Why wildness? Has it been published yet?
No. The Leonardo's Choice book is at final reviews at Springer in the bioethics and applied philosophy area in the Netherlands, and that's going to hopefully be coming out by the end of this year or the beginning of next. And Wildness and Technology was, I have a number of chapters done, and I've been working on that during my sabbatical got a writing residency at the Sitka Center for the Arts, so I was there for 2 months, which is absolutely a wonderful place.
So maybe just tell us, what is this wildness?
Yeah, wildness and technology. The idea behind the book is that I wanted to get a larger view of what it was that we were trying to dominate and trying to control with our new technologies, and why those new technologies would be very detrimental to animals, not just genetic technologies. So I'm looking in the book at wildness as something that is in some ways constructed by us, but also a force that is in the universe as a whole, and it is a creative force, and it certainly does not just exist with humans, that it actually is in my mind, and in a number of physicists and other people, philosophers, I'm trying to assimilate a lot of material, certainly biologists, that there is a creative evolutionary force that we can't really control, no matter how hard we try. Not really opposing, but trying to look at the impact on that of the newer technologies, which would be biotechnology, nanotechnology, and artificial life, artificial intelligence, robotics.
So this wildness is almost instinctive within us, would you say?
Well, I think it's. I wouldn't call it instinctive. I think it's a creative evolutionary force, and it's
wow, I love that.
The ability for beings to self-replicate. Is certainly something that is not, that we have. I don't think we're anywhere near being able to give that to ourselves. So it's not just about our creativity and our creative force, but other beings' creative force and the world at large. So we're all a part of that same with animals and with plants. That same creative force.
Carol, you have a wonderful web page. Maybe you can mention that.
Okay. It's carolgiliotti.net. So it's HTTP, www.carolgiliotti.net. And I actually have just put up a lot of radio interviews I've been doing and my writing and my speaking.
And it's a double T, Gigliotti.
Yes, it's actually Gigliotti.
Gigliotti? Sounds like ice cream. But,
it actually means lily in Italian.
Lily? Oh, lily, wonderful. Yeah. Well, you are the lily for the animals, teaching animal compassion and combining with art and technology. And it's quite beyond me. I never even thought that anything like that would exist. It should appeal to some of our listeners.
Well, and I also think it's a large force of activism for animals as well.
Well, it's a new issue here for us, and I thank you for bringing this to our listeners, and we will post this interview on our webpage. People
Great.
Can go back and just see what that's all about together with your webpage on animalvoices.org.
Thank you, Carl. I love the work you're doing, and thanks so much for having me.
Goodbye for now, Carol.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Carol. Yes, and you're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFRO Radio 102.7 FM in Vancouver. And Alan, maybe you have some music for us.
We can hear a few bars of a lovely piece called The Owl Waltz.
Okay. Thank you for that music, Alan. And well, we soon will be speaking with the SPCA about
Elise Kirsten. Yes.
Elise Kirsten. Anyway, she could call in if she's listening. But you know, what's happening on the scenes every day is that over a million animals die in traps each year in Canada. Approximately the same number die on fur farms each year. And you know, these trappers, they a million animals die in these traps each year. And a trapper with a registered line has up to 3 days to check the leg hold traps. So can you just imagine the agony that these animals are going through while they're being impaled there?
Very painful.
And then on private property, the trappers are given 24 hours to check their traps. So so that's one of the things that we haven't... that Ban Lego Traps is a great web page to have a look at. Well, in the past week, there was some of us went out to UBC, hand out a few leaflets about animal experimentation, and over 100,000. I believe we do have our next caller online, so over to you, Kim.
Hi, Kirsten. Do we have you on the line? Hello, Kristen.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, it's Kristen Diaz, is that it?
That's correct.
And how should we introduce you to our co-op listeners today? How would you like to be introduced?
I'm the marketing and logistics coordinator for Paws for a Cause at the BCFPCA.
Right, well, thank you for joining us this afternoon, because I understand we've got, we need to know about an event that's coming up on Sunday, and it sounds like the SPCA has outdone themselves, because there is a huge, huge event. Is this, that's true, right, on Sunday?
That's correct, yeah. It's this Sunday at Vanier Park in Kitsilano.
Vanier Park. Are there not also a number of different venues going on throughout the Lower Mainland as well?
That's correct. There's 37 other walks going across BC. Not all are on September the 14th. Some are going to be the day before. Some branches have already had their walks.
Right.
But the majority are going to be held this Sunday.
Fantastic. So it is quite a long campaign, and it apparently it runs from June 1st to September 14th.
That's correct. Yeah.
And I understand that you're hoping to raise $850,000 to help animals in need.
That's correct, yeah. But you know what? We're doing great this year, and we're just over halfway there.
Wow.
So we're confident we're going to meet and hopefully exceed our goal.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we're
Kristen.
Very happy.
And can you tell us a little bit about what the SPCA plans to do with the funds? I understand that every dollar counts towards helping animals in the local community.
That's correct. So the funds raised at the Vancouver Walk will go towards Vancouver and actually Burnaby. Richmond's having a walk. So the funds will all stay in the local walk community to help the local shelters there for the costs of sheltering the animals, emergency calls. The costs, the funds raised also go to help offset the costs of cruelty investigations that the BCFPCA does. We're also involved in farm animal welfare. So some of the costs go to that program as well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And what has been your most rewarding experience so far as marketing and logistics coordinator with the cause?
There's definitely been a lot, but I think our whole team, you know, we've focused on some animals on the website.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just getting some of that information out, we found some homes for animals. And just, I mean, going down to the shelter and seeing where the money we raise, where it's going, it definitely makes you feel good and helps give you some more energy to get mm-hmm. through things.
It sounds like it's a very personal feel when you're putting an animal's photo and a little bit of the background, maybe what they've gone through, and then the plea to look after this animal makes it a very personal sojourn into helping the animals. I think that's really effective, and you've probably felt that that was, for the website, something that brought a lot of hits to your website and a lot of fundraising.
Yeah, I think so. It's the animals that draw the attention, definitely.
Of course. And can you tell us a little bit about what people can expect at the event this year?
Definitely. So the Vancouver event runs from 10 o'clock to 2. Mm-hmm. Our walk is going to start at noon, but we're going to have some fun events throughout the day. So we're going to have an agility demo. We're going to be doing a little pooch parade. So we're going to have some of the dogs from our Vancouver and Burnaby shelters out to tell a little bit about their stories and hopefully find them some homes. We're going to be also having a little competition, a bowl licking competition. So different size dogs can compete to see who finishes their food first, licks the bowl clean. So there'll be some fun things. We're also going to have a lot of community groups out and other animal advocacy groups out. And some samples. We'll have some food. So it'll be a really fun day for everybody.
So you're definitely encouraging caregivers to come out with their animals?
Definitely,
caregivers here at the station.
Yeah, guardians, definitely.
And,
yeah.
Guardians, okay, awesome. And they'll come to the event and register for
yep.
a number of these things? They can do that, or do they have to do it ahead of time? This is what I'm
Some people
wondering.
Have registered online. Our website is www.spca.bc.ca/walk.
Okay.
But if you haven't registered online, it's okay. You can still come down. There's a registration fee of $20. If you want to do some fundraising in the next couple days, as long as you raise over $20, then you don't have to pay the registration fee. So you can just come down the day of. You don't have to worry about if you haven't registered yet.
That's a great incentive.
Yeah.
And tell us what motivated you to first get involved with this campaign?
Oh, of course, the animals. I've always loved animals, and all of my career so far has been focused on animals, and I wanted to move to nonprofit. So, and I know the Society is a great organization to work for.
Yes, awesome. And how long has Paws for a Cause been going on?
Paws for a Cause started in the early 90s. In a few communities across BC, and it's grown to where it is now, so over 37 communities involved, and a goal of over $850,000, so it's, yeah, nice to see.
It's substantial.
Yes, definitely. So we're expecting close to or over 2,000 people just to come out to the Vancouver Walk.
Oh, I imagine.
Yeah.
Awesome. And what advice would you give to others if they want to get involved? Are there still openings for volunteer positions? And what kind of work, what kind of help do you need up to the day?
We have filled all of our volunteer positions, and thankfully there's a lot of people that offer to work for us, so that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the things that our volunteers will be doing, they'll be helping with the walk route, making sure the water bowls are filled up for the dogs, making sure everybody knows where to go on the walk route, helping to direct for parking. They'll be helping us to set up the tents and tear down. So volunteers actually play a very big role in the campaign. We've got just over 200 volunteers in BC helping with Paws for a Cause.
Mm-hmm. That sounds
awesome.
Definitely,
we couldn't do it without our volunteers. So, as I said, we are filled, but definitely you can check the website closer to June next year and apply to be a volunteer.
Absolutely. That sounds fantastic. Mm. Do you have any questions, Carl, for Kristen?
Yes, I know. You mentioned that the walk will be taking place in Kitsilano.
That's right.
Now, Kitsilano is quite a big place.
Mm-hmm.
So where will that be in Kitsilano?
So the closest parking lot would be the Maritime Museum. That's a paid parking, but there's also parking at the Space Center that's free parking. So that's where we're advising everybody to park. And once you park and come there, you'll be able to see the tents and everything and where we are. It'll be quite visible.
Now, somebody said that you were also going to be at Ambleside in West Vancouver. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, we'll also be at West Vancouver. We've got a walk in Richmond. We also have a walk in Surrey, Coquitlam. So there's, yeah, definitely a lot of locations across the Lower Mainland.
You'll see some of our friends from Animal Voices there. So.
Oh, great. Wonderful.
Okay, over to
and
you,
so we'll
Kim.
Find you either down at... will we find you at Vanier Park? We hadn't mentioned Vanier, but it really is Vanier Park, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. I will be at Vanier Park.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. And, you know, one of the things that the SPCA does, do you work for the SPCA after you do this, or
yes.
Is this the full year?
It's a full year job.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I noticed one of the campaigns that the SPCA is doing right now is to eradicate puppy mills. Can you comment on that initiative at this time?
I can't say too much myself about that, but I know we do see, unfortunately, a lot of dogs and puppies come in from puppy mills, so it's something that I think needs to be focused on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not working on that initiative, so I can't comment on it directly. I know I have fostered a couple dogs that have come from puppy mills, and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
What is a puppy mill? Maybe just explain that.
Well, a puppy mill is usually it's a breeder that has a lot of animals and it a lot of dogs or cats, I guess. So it wouldn't be called a puppy mill, but they really can't focus on care for the animal, and it's breeding for profit. So the animal's best interest isn't being kept in mind here. So we see a lot of health issues. We see, you know, a lot of behavioral issues. It's a really sad thing for the animals involved.
Well, Kirsten, what we'd like to do is just cap up here.
Sure.
And make sure that everybody had a chance to grab a pen and get to write down the website. And we just want to let them know what you said was the www.spca.bc.ca/walk.
That's correct. Actually, I think that's a forward slash walk, yeah.
Forward slash walk.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for clarifying. That can make all the difference on the website. So we're speaking to Kristen Diaz from the Marketing and Logistics Coordinator for the SPCA Pause for a Cause, and we'll see you out there on Sunday starting at 10.
Yep.
And bring down your dogs and anything else you'd like to add for the listeners?
No, I just hope to see you at the Vancouver Walk, or if you've got one in your community, I hope you go out there. It'll be a lot of fun.
Well, thank you so much
okay.
for joining us.
Thank you for the support.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Kim. And, well, you're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFRO Radio 102.7 FM in Vancouver. And many of our programs are posted on our webpage, animalvoices.org. Well, Alan, do you have a little tune for us?
Sure. Well, we'll see what comes out of the box when I hit the button. It's a piece of music called Johnson Warhorse, and that's John Reichman up in the woods, a local artist who's really, really good. And if you see John Reichman and the Jaybirds playing around town, you want to check it out because they are great. Anyway, it is now 12:43, and you are tuned to CFRO, Vancouver's Cooperative Radio, 102.7 FM, and around the world, across the universe, on cooperadio.org. And this is the Animal Voices show, and Carl, you're up.
Yes, in the North Shore News of North Vancouver, they used to have Bob Hunter's editorial, and he was, it was every week, and Bob Hunter, if you might remember, was one of the founders of Greenpeace, and Bob Hunter wrote about once when he went on a tour with his family. His kids were, children were young, and they traveled thousands of miles through the United States, back to the Maritimes and back to Vancouver, and always their dog was in the back. I presume it was a station wagon. The dog was always quiet and peaceful, and after they'd been away for nearly 5 weeks, they came close to home, and Bob Hunter said, somehow or other, the dog knew they were close to home, and the dog got all excited. Bob Hunter didn't know how to explain that. Well, there's Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, and he writes about the extraordinary creative and psychic powers of animals, and he's the author of some 75 scientific papers and 10 books. How he does this is the studies he has are in what is called controlled double-blind experiments, and he has found compelling evidence of interspecies telepathy, including the uncanny, and yes, that uncanny most pet owners will recognize, ability of dogs to anticipate when their owners are returning home. It is clear that animals know a lot more than we give them credit for. Well, Dr. Sheldrake quotes some of these examples of an African grey parrot called Nkisi. And this parrot had a vocabulary of 950 words. And it shows a sense of humor and is able to come up with new words and phrases to explain novel ideas, just as human children do. Well, among some of Nkisi's stunning examples of intellect, she was inventing the phrase pretty smell medicine to describe aromatherapy. And she said, got a chimp, upon meeting chimpanzee expert Dr. Jane Goodall for the first time, after she was viewing photos of her with apes. And this Nkisi parrot also said, you got to put this bird on the camera when another parrot hung upside down on his perch. Stories like these are not rare either. They're quite common. For instance, one researcher found that rats actually laugh when they are tickled.
Oh, come on. Rats are laughing.
Sure.
How can you tell a little squeal from a rat? I'd like to see
it. Cats smile. And,
yeah,
you know,
okay.
You
well,
can
Cheshire cat smile. Yeah.
And you can always see from by looking at the expression on the dog's face whether it's happy or not. It'll tell you. Like,
yeah, his whole body language, right?
What are you eating? What are you eating? And he puts his head to the side. I mean, this is language.
Well, we tend to draw too much of a distinction between ourselves and other animals. It's in the nature almost, well, at least of our culture, if not of human beings generally, but certainly in Western culture, we tend to think of other animals as somehow just totally remotely different, but they're not. I mean, we are animals, they are animals, and we're all animals, and we all relate in very much the same way to many things, and the same way you can tell, you know, human beings have expressions, whether it's facial expressions or body language or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, of course animals do too, and of course animals can relate to things in many of the ways we do, where, you know, we are, like, every animal is fundamentally different than every other animal in some respects. Like, we all have our own ways of dealing with the universe and specializing so we can function in the universe. But we're all animals. We've all come from the same background, and we all do have a lot of similarities. There's something interesting in the paper just the other day about researchers have realized that crows, in fact, recognize people. I mean, individual people. So they've found, so if people, say, are friendly to crows and feed them, the next time that that person walks along the street, the crow will recognize that individual. And same if somebody's throwing stones at the crows and being nasty to it, the crow will recognize that person. It's not just people in general, but they can look at at either the facial features or the way the person moves or whatever, but they can recognize them the way we recognize somebody. You know, it's another example of, you know, we would think that animals don't recognize individuals. Somebody like a crow, say, wouldn't recognize you. If you have a crow that hangs around your yard, the fact is that crow starts to know who you are and will recognize you personally. You're not just that, that's another person. We tend just to say that's another crow, but they're smarter than us. They can recognize the individual people.
I'd like to know how long their memory span goes for. If I don't see the crow for a week, can I expect that the crow would know me the following week?
Past winter, I had a crow that used to come and visit the table with organic sunflower seeds on there, because he would scoop them all up, much like that that squirrel also scoops everything up and doesn't leave anything for anybody else. But you know, I was walking on Roslyn Avenue one day, and I saw the crows there, and I speak to the crows, especially the one that always came. It was always the same crow. You know, the crows, Alan just told me, the crows can recognize me, but I can't recognize the crow. So they're smarter than I am in many ways. Well, you know, Dr. Sheldrick raised a very valid issue here, because, you know, he actually said here that, you know, talking about the psychic animals. But one has to question whether these animals are psychic or just really smart. I mean,
or intuitive.
Yeah, or that's right. Intuitive in the way in that they might have a sixth sense.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Because that brings me to that story about Oscar the cat was living in the hospital, and Oscar had this, they noticed that Oscar had this uncanny ability to predict when nursing home residents are about to die. And they watched this in at least 25 different cases, that Oscar the cat had accurately chosen who is about to die, usually within 4 hours, by curling up on their bed, nuzzling the person, and purring until they pass away. So that's very conclusive evidence there. And
So this cat didn't do that to anyone else except for those that would pass? Is that what you're telling me? Did someone watch this cat that closely?
That's right.
Wow.
There's a study that...
That's a fascinating study.
Anyway, horses, of course, this coming weekend in Southlands, there is a horse show, which I'll be tabling for Canadians for the ethical treatment of food animals. We're so in love with the horses. And also this is about the abilities of horses to know where they are. And this was an article I came across from Verlin Klinkenborg, and she says, I have enormous respect for a horse's sense of place, its acute memory for terrain. I've been riding when my horse suddenly pauses because some detail in the landscape has changed. A fallen branch has been moved aside or a stream bed has gone dry, while I struggle to remember what the detail might have been. A horse's attention in is particularly not abstract or symbolic. It shows in the cant of its ears, the flicker of its eyes, the fluidity or hesitation of its gait. In the mid-1990s, my wife and I used to haul horses to Wyoming to ride in horse training clinics and with ranching friends. The horses stood quietly in the trailer watching as Ohio or Iowa or South Dakota went by. I wondered, as I always do, just what they were noticing and how it was being imprinted on their minds. Thinking of those things somehow made it clear that the signs along the freeway, flashing neon, enormous billboards, were designed for less attentive species. And it's true. Every time I've gotten in trouble on horseback, it was because my attention had wandered. Last week, I drove past the farm I had lived on when I first moved to the country. I hadn't really expected to go that way, but there was suddenly, in this little hollow along a river, and there was a shed I'd built, and now that I think of it, the creek that trickled down off the mountain to the east side, I thought of a border terrier named Tonic who lived there too, and it all seemed impossibly distant. I wondered if the human ability to map our world is somehow connected to how separate the past sometimes seems. It's a question I'd like to be able to ask my horse. Are the past and the present the same for you? Do you remember these trips west and the herd you came from? Or would you have to relive it all for the memories to come alive? And that's a little story about the horse map by Verlin Kringlenborg.
That's very interesting. I'd just like to repeat my point from a while ago that the horse is animals, we are animals, we all have so much in common. And when you talk about do animals have sixth sense, well, you have to include human beings in that too. If you think there might be, you know, something like we would call sixth sense, like the ability to recognize things that is kind of outside of our normal five senses, so to speak, well, there may be people who are able to do that. Or maybe everybody is, but they don't realize it. But then if we can, then why can't other animals have that ability mm-hmm. also? I mean, they all have the same five senses, like we and all the other animals have the so-called five senses. So if there was a sixth sense, we'd probably all have that too, right? There's no reason not to think so.
Well, we only have a few minutes left, but I picked up a copy of this, I think, the West Ender, and it's well, of course, what's in the news today, in the media everywhere, it's about elections. And they say, in the election sweepstakes, the U.S. has the power of mass distraction.
Yeah.
With all the elections coming this fall and winter, global warming is bound to spike up with the increase in hot air. South of the border, they're electing a president. Here in Canada, we're heading into a federal election. And here in Vancouver, where I live, North Vancouver, we'll vote for a new civic government in November. It would be great if the environment didn't have to be an election issue. If all political parties recognized it's an issue so critical that it should transcend partisan politics. And Alex Smith from Radio EcoShock would agree with me on that one. So he's going to be coming up pretty soon, a great program about the environment, which everybody should listen to, and coming up pretty soon.
Well, I think in terms of what you're saying with the election, the most fundamental issue is the environmental issue, is global climate change, but not just that. What's happening to it, to the other species we share the planet with, and the lack of action by most levels of government, most places, to deal with this problem of the growing number of endangered species and disappearing mm-hmm. species. And when you're deciding who to vote for, that should be a fundamental thing to consider. there may be other issues you think are important, you know, but that's the most important issue. Because there are some people and parties who are running for office who could care less about that. They're only interested in their connection with big business and being on the side of you know, the big business, the rich guys club, and that's where they want to be. And there's a big problem in supporting that sort of mentality, because it's just going to completely ignore the fundamental issue, this situation that human beings have painted ourselves and the planet into, this corner that, you know, is just about to, you know, we're just about to paint a complete room up, and then it's all going to be gone, right? So
perhaps we should let the animals have a vote.
Yes.
Here.
There we go.
And we have 2 minutes left, minute and a half.
And it just broke my train of thought. You know, it was interesting that as Hurricane Ike is ready to hit all the oil wells in the Gulf, and of course Galveston and Houston maybe even, it creates a tremendous damage. But when I was watching the Weather News Network, I found this interesting comment, and it said, well, you know, actually, I thought the hurricane season was nearly over. But as the season goes by, the ocean is warming up. And the warmer the ocean is, so they have discovered, the greater the intensity of these hurricanes. And it does not really look good for the next decades or century if this global warming and the heating up of the oceans continues at such an unabated pace. Well, in this program, Animal Voices, we seek to enlighten you and our listeners, thank you for listening, about animal-related causes. We do this by presenting programs that deliver a message that would inspire you to improve the lives of animals. And we'll be back next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's